Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. To learn more, visit rt11.com.
Well, hello. Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you from Le Pavillon at 1 Vanderbilt Avenue in New York City. It is Monday, September 13th, 2021, and it is our 300th episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a legendary chef and restaurateur. By my location, you could probably guess who that is, but I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to pay homage. Yes, let's give back to those who have influenced us and the world, having made an everlasting impression on our careers and our lives. Let's show our love, appreciation, and respect for those people or things by celebrating them in whatever capacity feels right to us. In doing so, we will not only create new feel-good moments, but keep the memories alive. So let's pay tribute. That's my tip today. Now, I'm thrilled to have my guest with me. It is Danielle Belloud. He is a renowned chef and owner of several award-winning restaurants and the Feats and Fets catering company. Danielle's New York City restaurants include his flagship two Michelin star Danielle, a Relais Chateau member, and his latest, where we're at, Le Pavillon, a seafood and vegetable-focused restaurant where nature meets architecture. Beyond Manhattan, Danielle has extended his culinary reach across the U.S. and around the world, from Miami to Washington, D.C., to Singapore, Montreal, Dubai, and beyond. His numerous accolades include James Beard Foundation Awards for Outstanding Restaurant, Outstanding Restaurateur, Best Chef, New York City, Outstanding Chef of the Year as well. Without further ado, hi, Danielle. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Sherry, and thank you for having me on the 300th show. Congratulations.
Thank you. You're the perfect person to have to celebrate this. I can't believe I've done 300 shows.
Most of your show have been in New York, the 300 show, or you travel the country sometime? Or you have talent coming to you?
Most of them, New York and at Heritage Radio's studio in Brooklyn. The pandemic kind of changed things up a little bit where I started doing my show remotely. The advantage of that is an opportunity to interview people anywhere around the world, but there's still something special about going out to the studio in Brooklyn, which you came to.
I asked that because I didn't get a chance to listen to the 300 of them. So.
Oh, okay. Yes, but it's a mix, and it's all behind-the-scenes talent in hospitality.
Of course,
from chefs and restaurateurs.
I'm familiar very much with your show, and I hear here and there the interview from colleagues. And you just did one in Brooklyn at Francis.
Yes, I did it with John Winterman.
With John Winterman, who was an alumn of restaurant Daniel and Café Voulu.
Yes, I've actually had several of your alum or on my show, from Carla Siegel to Georgette Farkas.
Of course.
Brett Trousey.
Yes.
Yes, I mean, a lot of talent has come from your kitchens and working with you. Usually I start out every show and I say, I ask my guest about to go back to their childhood and their background and to take us there. Mm-hmm. Now, we did a show in 2019 in March. It's episode 210. And I asked you that. And anyone who wants to go back can listen and hear, because you did bring us back to Lyon and how you got started as a chef and Excellent. In the industry. Mm-hmm. So this show, I'm not going to ask that. I think today we should talk more about the present and this new beautiful restaurant we are in. And also this last year, I mean, since that show, a lot has changed. The world changed since 2019.
Of course.
So talk a little bit about Le Pavillon. I hope I'm saying that right.
Yes, Le Pavillon.
Because you were working on this project. I remember you were picking out chairs when we spoke.
Mm-hmm.
So how have things, you're now open. I've had a wonderful solo dining experience here. Mm-hmm. How did things change with the pandemic and getting open? And now that you're open, how's it going?
Of course, the pandemic was not in our projection, neither would have could imagine that when I furlough all my employees on March 13, 2020, it was devastating, and I felt like, I hope we're all getting back together by the summer, and that was in March. And of course, we got back together during the summer, but that was only 10% at the time, and very little activity at the time. But we kept working on this project as well while I was trying to reopen all my restaurants at the same time. And this project came about 4 years ago to us, and that was before they demolished and started building the tower. But the project itself of One Vanderbilt Tower started 10 or 12 years ago. I think that was during the Bloomberg administration. He wanted to really revitalize Midtown and give opportunity for developer to create some iconic building and also some new real estate that are up to date also. And this opportunity to do this restaurant with SL Green, the developer, was really, really tempting, because that was the first time that I was going in partnership with someone in New York. I was usually owned and operated myself. And we created a very unique restaurant in a very vibrant location. We are next to Grand Central, between Madison Avenue and Grand Central at One Vanderbilt. And the development really, I felt that making the opportunity was to make the restaurant at the second floor. And I felt that will be perfect, because the ceilings are 75 foot tall on one side and 35, very dramatic architecture on that corner of the building, the south east corner. And I felt that we could create something quite unique for New York, and maybe the most New York restaurant that could be, because you really have an amazing view of the Chrysler Grand Central Station, and that's quite iconic. And we didn't get slowed down too much during COVID, despite the restriction. We couldn't put trades together too much. So certain trade could do the job, but not all the trade together. So that did about a 3 months delay, which was nothing in the scale of this development. And of course, the restaurant took, the building took 4 years to build, or 3.5 years, and the restaurant took about 2.5 to that.
Well, it's gorgeous. And the soaring ceilings and the height is, I've never seen something quite like that.
And that was great, when we had to make a decision about the designer, we had four designers we wanted to select. And out of those four, one I knew well and I liked very much, and I felt that it could be maybe the most sensitive to the architecture of the space, was Isai Weinfeld. And Isai is from Rio de Janeiro, but he has done projects here in New York. One of them is down in Chelsea called Jardim, and other private residents and other club, also a private club. And I think Isai really understood that it was important not to fight the existing architecture, but to really integrate something that could live well into it. And that's how the design started to be, where we dedicated 50% of the space for a living garden. And I think people feel very comfortable. It is modern, it is classic, it is casual, and it is chic at the same time. So there's all this combination. And then the menu, I wanted the opportunity to create a menu who was focusing on seafood and vegetable, and the seafood being mostly from the long coast of the Atlantic. And of course, we bring other things like salmon have to come from Alaska during the Alaskan season, and certain fish from Europe during certain season. But otherwise, also the vegetable from at least the five states around New York, which I count five when you think of Vermont and Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and Virginia. And,
right.
But, of course, New Jersey is very important and New York. But that has seasonality to it. It has definitely, we love to cook with technique. We love to cook with flavor. I love to cook French, but at the same time, it's always, to me, French cuisine has always been in reinvention, and it's constantly in motion with its maybe heritage and its future.
Yes. Well, anyone who wants to hear about my experience on episode 293, I talked about my solo dining experience where I had your lobster and those oysters. Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
Oyster Vanderbilt, yes.
Wow.
You know, I'm joking. I'm joking to everyone and say that Vanderbilt, the Commodore, they used to call it, Vanderbilt built the station, Grand Central Station, and he built the Oyster Bar. And Vanderbilt was never had an oyster named after him. And Rockefeller had an oyster named after him and was very popular at the Oyster Bar. Uh-huh. And I felt that being so close to Grand Central Station, being in a building called One Vanderbilt, and at the address of One Vanderbilt on Vanderbilt Avenue, Vanderbilt deserved an oyster. So we created an oysters with my team where we wanted to do a warm oysters. And it is actually very American in a way, but in a very classic way of an oyster gratiné. And on the bottom of the oyster, we have an oyster chowder, a classic oyster chowder that we blend our potatoes and leeks and all that. So it creates a wonderful creamy sauce on the bottom, and of a good, great flavor of oysters, and there's some garnish of leeks and potatoes. And then we have the poached oyster on top, and then we have a crust of herb, Finn's herb and seaweed, and hazelnuts and butter. And it's
served with a spoon.
And it's served with a spoon because it's not the kind of oyster you grab and you swirl into your mouth. It's kind of something you enjoy, you know, spoon by spoon.
It's so delicious. So delicious. Like, amazing. You talked about the name of with the oysters. What about the name of the restaurant itself, Le Pavillon? Because I know there was an original, I think, from 1941. Actually, I was going mm-hmm. back with our dear friend, Georgette Farkas, and yes. talking a little bit about the history of that. But was that, why did you decide to name the restaurant the same or after that restaurant?
Well, you know, I didn't grow up in New York, but when I came to New York as a young chef, I met a lot of people who had either lived there or worked here since quite a long time, and even many French people as well. And so I was always interested by the French history of dining in New York City and who was the restaurant. And I heard about a restaurant called Coup de Fusil, and I heard about a restaurant named Le Colony, and of course Le Pavillon, and also there was a restaurant at the Plaza Athénée Hotel, which was not the Plaza Athénée Hotel at the time. But there was all these very interesting restaurants created in the 40s and 50s and 60s, and there was a restaurant who always, right away when I arrived, I learned that that restaurant don't exist, but that restaurant was the greatest restaurant, French restaurant in New York, and the name was Le Pavillon. And the maître d', where I was working at the Westbury Hotel, it was the Polo Lounge when I started in New York on 69 and Madison. That was the Westbury Hotel. And the restaurant, the Polo Lounge, the maître d' was William Mascarotti. And William Mascarotti was the maître d' at Le Pavillon in the 50s and 60s. And of course, unconsciously, I was not conscious really that when I named the restaurant here Le Pavillon, that was not because of William, but I do remember the story he was telling me about that restaurant and the people who used to go there, and Vanderbilt used to go there, and the family. I mean the family, but you know the Mellon, the Rockefeller, all the mm-hmm. the time, a period where they were definitely big family in New York, and they were all going to this fancy restaurant. And so Le Pavillon started because of the World Fair in 1939, where a large group of French came from Restaurant Drouin in Paris. And Restaurant Drouin was, I guess, a three-star or two-star restaurant, but it was one of the finest restaurants in Paris. And they came and brought fine dining to America through the World Fair. And of course, the war had started in Europe, and they didn't want to go back to Europe, those French waiters and chefs and cooks and managers and maître d's. And so they decided to stay in New York, and they started to sprout restaurants everywhere. And one of them was Henri Soulet, and he started Le Pavillon. So that was, like you say, maybe 41, 43. I don't have the exact date.
I had looked it up, and mm-hmm. It was 41.
It was
41
right
to 66. And yes. Also, Jacques Pepin was apparently the very first employee.
Maybe not the first, but Pierre Franet.
Okay.
Was one,
oh, right, right.
Pierre Franet was on the they all came with the same ship to New York at the time. And Pierre Franet, who, you know, New Yorkers knew very well for a long time because he had a column on the New York Times. And when I was over the years after the Plaza after the Polo Lounge, I went to the Plaza Athénée, and I could hear story again about Le Pavillon. And then coming to the Cirque, I was entering this kind of family of restaurants which came after Le Pavillon. And that was La Grenouille, and that was La Caravelle, La Côte Basque, Le Cirque, Le Cygne, Le Périgord. Comment?
Capsudo Frère?
Yeah, but Capsudo was a little different. Right, it was downtown already, mm-hmm. a little bit. But and those restaurants were very similar. They had a theme. They had a theme either that was the Chantilly was the Chateau of Chantilly. La Côte Basque was the Côte Basque. La Caravelle was about those ships coming, the sailing ships. And Le Cirque was about animation and this sort of singerie of the, I guess it was the 18th century or 19th century. And they all had the same kind of attitude, those restaurants. They all had the same kind of service. Mm-hmm. They all had the same kind of menu as well. When I came to Le Cirque, I felt the menu was really similar to many other, and I wanted to do a lot of change there. And I did quite a lot of change, and yet I respected the classic, which was important for me. But I always had this curiosity for New York classic French restaurant. And I think Le Pavillon was really the lightning rods of this generation of restaurant in New York, French restaurant.
Yeah.
And that, I would say, lasted until the late 90s when La Caravelle closed, I would say. So for me, the name was also synonymous of the meaning of it. Le Pavillon Français at the World Fair, Le Pavillon in New York. But in France, Le Pavillon, it's often in a big avenue, and it's either a small building, or it's on the side of a castle or a big park or something. And it's a small building where it's created to do entertainment. It's created to welcome people, to entertain, to dine, to party. And here, the location of this restaurant in this very large building at One Vanderbilt, I always felt that has his own pavilion here on the side.
Yes, well, it's fabulous, and that the history is, it's...
So, of course, we're in a different millennium, different century, but it's good to keep it's good to stay connected with the history of French dining in New York.
Yes, I agree. Let me ask you my question for my last guest. On episode 299, I had on Serbi Sani. She's the chef and owner of Tagmo, which is a new restaurant in Manhattan's Seaport District featuring homestyle Indian cuisine and confections. Oh, good. I'm working with her, actually, full disclosure. And she's in her soft opening right now, and it's going to be launching on Friday. So would love to have you.
Yeah, absolutely. I love Indian food.
Oh, wonderful. So she would like to know, having had so many accomplishments through the years and truly being a legend, what's the one achievement or moment that has really stood out that has made you feel like you have arrived or nothing could be better than this?
Well, you know, as a French, of course, is when I received the Legion d'Honneur, because that was sort of something that my family never had a chance to receive. And the meaning of it that, you know, you really have accomplished something very good for your country, and yet it don't matter where you did it in the world, you represented some quality about your country, either it's in your craft or it's in your achievement. So that was a good thing to receive that while I was in New York. But at the same time, in New York, I received a lot of accolade for the work I've done over the year in New York. I was in Aspen this weekend, and I was saying to the newly appointed chef class,
yes. Yeah, which you were the first. Yes.
Yeah, the 10 best chefs
from Food and Wine.
And I was on the first 10 best chef list in 1988. And I think from that point to, receiving lifetime achievement by the 50 best in the world, that was also a great achievement. And of course, but one of them who is very, it's not discreet, but not too many people know, and yet I know it's going to be there for a long time, is my portrait in the subway.
Oh, we talked about that on my last show, actually.
On 72nd Street and 2nd Avenue. I don't go and see myself too often there, but I don't, and I'm in the mosaic of the subway on 72nd.
It's very special. I mean, it will live there,
forever. Yeah, for a long time.
It
will outlive me, I hope.
Yeah.
That's something very unique, because I've been on the Upper East Side, a citizen of the Upper East Side of New York, for the last 40 years. next year, that would be 40 years. So to have that there, I think to me, that's an achievement and at the same time, an amusement.
Yes. I mean, it's...
Which
it's
is a, the story of my life in New York. I've always been very entertained by New York, but also very passionate and motivated by New York.
Yes. And I mean, I wanted to talk. I'm glad she asked that because I figured my 300th episode here, we should talk about milestones, and because this is one for me, and you've had so many. So I'm so glad you touched on that. And it is incredible. It's very cool. And I had read something that you were going to be opening in Los Angeles.
Yes.
So is that something? What led you to make that decision? Because you've held off on it for
a
while.
I always told Wolfgang Puck that if he ever comes to New York, I'll go to L.A.
So and Wolfgang
came down to the Four Seasons. We've cut down at the Four Seasons. And I have a couple of colleagues. I want them to come. I mean, of course, Michael McCarty came to New York quite a long time ago and was really, really... welcome and loved here. And I think LA, I've always loved LA for a long time. I was in California in the early 80s when even in, I will say my first trip to LA was 81 when I was in Washington, DC. So I always loved LA. And I had a show called After Hours with Daniel Boulud. That was about 10 years ago. 10, 12 years ago, and I did 10 shows in New York and 10 shows in LA and also 5 in New Orleans and 5 in Miami. And during that 2 weeks I spent in LA doing those shows, I had a chance to meet many colleagues and restaurateurs and young chefs and media. And that was a real fun things to do. And I always felt like, oh, one day if I open a restaurant West Coast, that should be LA.
Oh, fabulous. But I look forward to it.
So it's going to be a Café Boulud, and it's going to be on Beverly, Wilshire, and Palm Street, which is a little bit on the Beverly, Wilshire Boulevard.
Oh, fantastic. Later in the show, I have my solo dining experience.
But give me a year for that one.
Okay. I will. I was in L.A. recently, and I'm going to talk about a place I recently went to
that's
nearby, but we'll hold that for later.
There's an amazing chef in L.A. Amazing.
Yeah, the food scene's really,
fantastic.
It's fantastic. It's a wonderful city. So before we take a break, give us a little recap or what's the current status of your restaurants in New York City? Mm-hmm. How are they doing? How are you doing? I mean, the pandemic was, I know it was hard.
I know. It was very hard. For example, Café Boulud. During the pandemic, right after we closed for the pandemic, the Surrey Hotel went bankrupt. And the Surrey Hotel was a management company run by Danahan Group. And they were also a lender there. And there was a fight between the two. And there was an owner of the building. And the owner didn't accept any proposition from either side and I didn't see it coming that they were going bankrupt on me because Café Boulud was doing very well there. And bottom line, the owner of the building decided to sell the building and kick out the lender and the management company of the Surrey. And so I end up with a shut down building. And I had to leave the building. I mean, and so we had to stop Café Boulud operation totally because I would have reopened already otherwise. So we are looking for a new space on the Upper East Side. But we moved Café Boulud to the Berkshire in Lenox, Massachusetts at the Blantyre. I don't know if you ever had a chance to go.
I haven't, but I've seen some photos from it and I've read about it.
It's
and
wonderful.
It sounds
so we had the chance to at least
wonderful.
Take Café Boulud in the countryside for the time being until we reopen Café Boulud in New York. And then we reopen. So during the pandemic, of course, we tried to bring back staff. For me, it was very important. And the first thing we did was with the owner of this building, SL Green, Marc Holliday, the CEO, he created a charity called Food First. And he said, Daniel, I want to help you reopen your first kitchen. And I want to make meals for New Yorkers and for first responders and for food shelters and food pantries. And he also wanted to make sure that every tenant he had all over the city in a SL Green portfolio building, they could reopen their kitchen. And he really wanted to help them. He felt terrible for all his tenants. And so we started this foundation together in mid to late April. And to this day, we have served more than 1 million meals. And we and myself have dedicated meals to World Central Kitchen and also City Meal, where downtown in my commissary kitchen, we have prepared all those meals. And from there, we reopened Daniel and we created Daniel Boulou Kitchen and did the to-go business, of course, and then expanded with Gold Belly nationally. So there was local and national. And we still do today takeout from Daniel, which is something we've never done before.
Yeah.
People, well. Bicycle come in the front and pick up bags. So it's kind of fun. But and from that, we reopened Barbary on the west side. But we had to wait until Lincoln Center come back to be able to reopen Boulou Sud. We have reopened our epicery on the upper west side at Broadway and 64. Epicery Boulou at the Oculus. And we opened a brand new one on 42nd here in right. Vanderbilt also. We are also taking care of the amenity of the building on the third floor above Le Pavillon. So between Le Pavillon, the epicery, the amenities, reopening Daniel, of course, that was very important. And we did the sidewalk cafe. We created an amazing terrace with bungalows.
I saw the winter. It looks, I've been by there.
Air conditioning in the summer and all that.
So yes.
It has been a roller coaster. We opened a new restaurant in Dubai during the pandemic in last year in November. We opened a new restaurant in the Bahamas, Cafe Boulou in the Bahamas, Brasserie Boulou in Dubai. We, of course, kept always Palm Beach open. Canada was closed for a long time, so I'm going to Toronto this week to see my team now finally at Cafe Boulou there.
Endless energy. I don't know how you do it. And that's, I'm glad your places are back and how you kept going.
I mean, at DB Bistro, because of Broadway not being back, we haven't reopened. And same with Boulou Sud. We are reopening Boulou Sud in a week and a half. And that's because also Lincoln Center is coming back. So I think tourism, entertainment, and culture will come back. And I think things... sport events and all that, that, you know, give the energy of New York to its fullest.
Absolutely. I had a wonderful dinner at Barbaloo over the summer, and I live in that, near that neighborhood. So.
And I think, like many of my colleagues, we had to adjust. Maybe if the restaurant was open 7 days a week before, maybe it's open less. Maybe we don't do seven lunch, seven dinner. Restaurant Daniel, now we decide to close on Monday rather than Sunday, because we are kind of Upper East Side and Sunday night is a very good night for the local. And also Cafe Boulou being closed Upper East Side now, I think it fill in the gap of wanting to have dinner with Daniel on Sunday. And we are opening lunch at Le Pavillon, but we're only opening Tuesday to Friday for now. So it's all this adjustment that everything will come back to normal, of course, one day. But until then, we have to make the best out of it.
Yes, and you absolutely are. So, wishing you continued success with that. On that note, let's take a little break. We'll come back. We'll play my speedrun game, talk some industry news. I have my solo dining experience and the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
This episode is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believe comfort food can be just that. Know where your food comes from. To learn more, visit rt11.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is legendary chef and restaurateur Danielle Belloud. We're on location at his latest New York City restaurant, Le Pavillon. And it's time for my speed round game, which you played once before, but you're going to, if you're up for it, play it again.
Let's go, Sherry.
Okay. Here we go. I'm going to name a couple things, and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla. That's kind of how
chocolate.
It goes. Okay. Perfect. Eat in, at home, or eat out at a restaurant?
Eat in at home.
Indoor dining or al fresco dining?
Indoor dining.
Wine, beer, cocktail, mocktail, or champagne?
Wine.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte, unless the chef wants to cook for me and I'm in the mood for it.
Okay, I hear you. Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Communal table.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Ha. Huh. We'll see where the future takes us, but I think tipping is good for now.
Okay. Sea scallops in black tie or papillette of sea bass?
Both.
Ah. I saw there were some dishes you did back in the day at Le Cirque. And other places.
And that's
as well.
What I'm telling my chef. You know, we have to create new classic. And those are the two classics that have outlived every decade. And I think the Oyster Vanderbilt at Le Pavillon will be one of them.
That's what I was thinking when you were just saying that. Yes. I mean, for me it is.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Okay, I have a couple more. I have Madeleines or Cronuts.
Madeleine.
Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
In Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Manhattan.
Fabulous. And for people who don't realize why I asked about Cronuts, because Dominique Ansel.
Of course.
I had met him. I met him when he was your pastry chef. Mm-hmm. So, and he's the inventor of
it's wonderful.
The Cronut. He's done very well. Fabulous. It was great. Okay, so for industry news, I picked out an article in the New York Times that came out last week, and it was called How Eating Has Changed from the Menu to the Tip, Early Bird Dinners, Sturdier Pizzas, Noisier Streets. The pandemic has brought a host of new developments that could last a while. And this was by the New York Times Food Desk. So there was a lot in this. I don't know if you were able to see this piece. But, you know, there were a few things that, I mean, I've observed this as well, but like, the new dinner hour, they're talking about how people are now dining or wanting to dine at early, at 5:30, yes. Versus oh. It used to not be
very
cool.
We opened the bar at 4:30 here
yeah.
at the Pavillon.
Yeah, so that was a change. They had solo dining in this, actually. They had tables for one. They said that increased. They talked about the yurts being repurposed. I mean, the ones you did, the outdoor dining you have at Danielle, I mean, they're like
I have not
stunning.
Decided where we're going to put them yet, but we have to see. Maybe in Coney Island.
Well, there, yeah. I mean, there, it's
think
like.
I like them in Coney Island there. Perfect for the beach.
So funny. I get, maybe you need to open another place and just, it's just all those.
I'm going to call it cabanas.
Yeah, they're, I mean, I haven't been in one, but from what I've seen,
oh,
that's like,
fantastic.
I want to, kind of want to live in it.
Now. It has music, it has a fan. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. So we'll see. There were a lot of changes. I mean, this article was full of stuff. It talked about the arrival for the burger, which has come about. The fried chicken sandwich is now popular. Mm-hmm. about QR menus lasting. I mean, are you doing?
Of course, you're doing the QR.
Yeah.
No.
Not here. Do you have it here?
At the Pavillon, I don't have it.
No,
but you because have, I felt that you know, it's okay when you go to a casual restaurant and all that, but I don't know. In a fine dining restaurant,
right.
QR code is not the way to go.
I think customers have gotten used to it.
We have to go back to. You know, I mean, if you can touch the door and all, I think you can touch the menu. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you on that. And actually, I'll note.
And we make sure that we take measure of cleanliness and safetyness as well.
Yes. And today actually is the day of the mandate of people being required to have vaccines to dine in restaurants in New York City is official today.
Yeah.
The first day of
school. But we have been asking already people for quite a while.
Yes, I've been finding that as well. But so I mean, it's interesting to see, you know, from changes that have happened, what's going to last. But if people,
I know there's certain things we want that to go away. I mean, of course, wearing masks for our staff, I think it's a very good thing for our service or everywhere. But at the same time, you know, life was better without it.
Yeah, well, I mean,
life is safer with it now, but life was better without it.
Yeah, it's like you take stuff for granted.
At least we see that when you are in the street, you don't feel as vulnerable because you're not going to catch it in the air. It's not like it's the density of the virus is not all over you. You know what I mean?
Right.
So at least in the street, you don't have to wear your mask everywhere. As soon as you have a little bit of freedom of walking in the street. Today, I walk like, I don't know, like 30 block or something.
I love walking in the city and the weather has been fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very much.
So that's industry news. So I'm going to quickly do my solo dining experience this week. So as I said, I was out in Los Angeles and I went to Biciclette Bistro. I don't know if you've heard of
Biciclette?
This. Biciclette, like mm-hmm. bicycle.
Bicycle, mm-hmm. Biciclette.
Yeah, I've
not been yet. Fun?
It was wonderful. It's brand new.
Yes.
So here's the rundown. The location, 9575 West Pico Boulevard, Los Angeles, mm-hmm. California. It's in Beverly Wood, and I was thinking it's near-ish where you're opening.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. I'm on that. The concept, it's a new Parisian-inspired restaurant featuring the best of Paris. The best of Paris's iconic bistro culture and California's fresh ingredients. The owners are chefs Walter and Marguerite Manske.
Of course, Manske. Yeah, Walter is very talented, and his wife too.
I figured you knew them, and because they have several restaurants, including Republique, which I have been to before.
Of course, now I've heard of their bistro. Yeah, wonderful, very.
Yeah. So
I know Walter forever, and. Of course, he has also.
There's a Petit Cash Taqueria is one of their places. Mm-hmm. But so why did I go? Well, because I'm a fan of Republique. This is a new opening.
Republique, of course, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my experience, I had been by the beach over in Venice earlier, and I had an early dinner over at Felix, which I'd been to before, and I. It got late, and I'm like, I'm going to go check out another place. So this was actually my second dinner of the evening. I went in. It was late. It was maybe around 9:30 as a walk-in. There weren't any seats at the bar when I first walked in. It was pretty busy, but the maitre d' was lovely. He told me it was opening up. People were going to the dining room to eat. So I waited.
And they have an onion soup gratiné for Los Angeles. That's good.
Oh, I love that you're looking it up. I didn't have that, but I did get a seat at the bar, and I had a fabulous time. I got, as part of my meal, I got the caramelized onion tart tatin.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. If you're scrolling through, look for a picture of that because it's gorgeous. I also got one escargot, which is burgundy escargot and croûte. It was so cute, Danielle. Mm-hmm. It was like served in this like individual little container. Yes.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I love that you could just get one because I was trying to taste lots of things. I got the Liberty Farm duck breast as the main.
Sweet.
And I also got a fig tart because I was sitting. So I was sitting at the bar and they have an open kitchen. And right next to me, yes, that's what I got. people, go look at this dish online, the onion tart. It's gorgeous. And the desserts for the restaurant were laying on the counter literally next to me, and so I had to get dessert. So I got a fig tart at the end, and it was all fantastic. I would recommend it. The ambiance, it's like a warm, intimate Parisian-like bistro. Again, it has an open kitchen, has a lot of dark woods, and mosaic tiles on the floor. Really good energy. I'd say it's perfect for dining solo at the bar or in the dining room with friends. Interesting tidbit. So they're going to be opening a BC Clat restaurant upstairs. I think it's going to be a little fancier. And there's a little bit of a French, mini French movement, I guess, happening in Los Angeles. I remember last time when I was there a couple of years ago, I went to Debron's Pajoli.
Oui.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which was wonderful.
No, but that's, LA has always been very, very sort of Francophile in their restaurants. And, you know, going back to the time of Michel Richard and L'Orangerie and...
Yes. But and, I don't know. I get the... But not compared to New York, I don't know, especially now, like the more modern French restaurants, I don't think they've had as many openings, which is why...
Yes, maybe not. You know, the days of Ma Maison and L'Orangerie and all that definitely passed.
Right. So, personal fun fact, as I mentioned, I went to Republique last time I was in LA a couple of years ago, and also this is my second dinner, and I'll give a shout out to some other places I went on this trip. I went to Found Oyster, I went to Damien Cougar, Courage Bagels, I keep saying Cougar Bagels, but it's Courage Bagels, the Brothers Sushi, Girl and Goat just opened a location there, I had a lot of amazing meals, I went back to Jugusta, which I love, and I hit up the Koji truck too. So.
Oh, cool. You did a lot.
Yeah. I always
do a lot. I need your list.
I will give you my list.
Your LA list.
Yes.
Downtown was a little more challenging during COVID, but...
Yeah, I stayed downtown this time. I stayed at the Hoxton Hotel, which I had a really nice experience, but yeah.
Did
it was
you
great.
Go to the Bloor? Was it open, the museum?
I didn't. I've been there, but no, I didn't go this trip.
Yeah.
I basically lived large and rented a really nice convertible and drove around and checked out lots of restaurants and saw the sunset on the beach and, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah it was a
the
good
LA,
trip.
The LA vibe.
Yeah, it was wonderful. So the cost of this meal was $78. That's not including tax gratuity or in LA, I always notice on the bills, they have a health charge. It was a 4% health charge. So they goes to, I think,
and
health
that
insurance
means for what? For...
It doesn't, it just says it's contribution to the employee's health care. And I don't really, I've saw it on several menus, different percentages.
I see.
Yeah, it's interesting,
yeah,
but they do that in California.
Have insurance to their employees there, so they are creating a way to be able to raise enough money for it.
Yeah, so.
I mean, I think LA, you have, the prices are reasonable still.
Yeah, I mean, I think across the board everything has gone up as it should be, but
I know.
So
we know then gas went up. I was talking to somebody who is importing a lot of things from Europe, and the cargo transportations by boat went up 400%.
Oh wow!
So chairs or any furnitures or things like that, it's huge. And, you know, our restaurant business, if we went up by 20%, is not even there. So there is disparity.
Yes,
and
I know.
We need to have, you know, I think it's going to be soon that restaurant will have to raise their price and do something because everything costs so much.
Yeah, well, we're seeing that, I mean... I know chefs and restaurateurs have been talking about that for a while, and I think the change is coming. And
otherwise, it'd be impossible to be in business.
Yeah. That's, so. Yeah. Well, we'll see.
And
we'll
my
see.
Last. No, go ahead.
Oh no! I was just to wrap that up. Anyone can check out. Go to their website. bgclet.la.com, and they're also on Instagram at bgclet.la. So that's that. But yeah, I look forward to getting back to LA, checking out your place. Maybe it will be, we'll see if it's open next time I visit. But
you're at least a year and a half.
Okay. So. Okay. Stay tuned.
But for the time being, right now at Daniel, Restaurant Daniel, we're in full renovation because that was supposed to happen in 19. And we didn't have a chance to be able to do the front of the house. We did the kitchen. I changed the stove and all that. And Daniel is going to be celebrating 30 years very soon.
Oh, wow. And, talk about milestones.
Yeah. And of those, there's about 24, 25 at 65th Street and Park Avenue. And so we are doing a renovation right now. And the bar will be in collaboration, in partnership with Lalique, the glassware company. And that's quite special. And then we have redone the entire dining room as well. And so Daniel will be a brand new restaurant. That's going to be the third renovation, as we did that every 10, 12 years. And so it's exciting. We are opening at the end of this week.
Oh, so soon. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so glad you
come and have a drink.
Mentioned
come
it.
And oh, yeah. Sit down at the bar and see
I would
us.
Love to. I would love to. I don't know how you manage your time between all these places floating around, but I'm sure you're going to be there when I go by. You seem to be everywhere all the time. but that's very exciting. I definitely would love to do that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so time for the final question.
Yes.
So my next guests are chef and founder Omar Tate and his wife and business partner, Chef Sybil St. Aud Tate. They're of Honeysuckle, which is a food-focused community center in their neighborhood in West Philadelphia. Omar founded Honeysuckle in 2017. It has received a lot of critical acclaim. He was Esquire's Magazine's Chef of the Year in 2020, and he was on Time's 100 Next 2021 list. And I recently went up, he was a chef in residence at Stone Barns, which they've been
yes,
doing.
Yes, of course.
So I was able to meet him there, and and I met his wife too. So Danielle, can you please ask a question for Omar and
yes,
Sybil?
Of course. If I can ask them a question.
Yes, anything.
Absolutely. Is that... I want to wish them a lot of success. And what's very important for me is that, I don't know if that is a question or an advice, but I think mentoring people, mentoring young people, helping young people enter our business and learn about it and be able to and be able to be inspired and, you know, continue in our footstep, I think it's very important. So my question is, would you join us in Mentor, our board of Mentor, who is a foundation we have created with Thomas Keller, myself, Jerome Bocuse. At the beginning, it was to support the American team for the Bocuse d'Or, mm-hmm, and then we grew to really go into the future of mentorship. And we will welcome him.
I will ask. I think it would be wonderful for him to get involved with that.
Absolutely.
And the work that you do. And
yeah,
yes, you've mentored.
Because we continue to expand our reach and our goodwill and our support to young chef.
Fabulous.
And young restaurateur and young, anybody in this industry who is interested to continue to grow with the best of this industry. And that best don't mean it has to be the finest. It can be very casual, but the best at it.
Yes. Well, it's fantastic. You are, I don't even have words for you being the things that you've accomplished and your legacy in this industry. You're so admired, not just by me, just across the board, because you do everything you do. And as I said, you seem to be everywhere all the time, endless energy. And I'm very honored to have this opportunity to speak with you again and
thank you, Sharon,
to be on my 300th episode.
And congratulations for, keeping our industry in a very positive light and also helping every one of us having the chance to have a chat with you. That's fantastic.
Aw, thank you. I mean, it's an honor and privilege to have the opportunity to talk with you and to chefs in the industry and I interviewed Thomas Keller.
And our industry needs people
amazing.
Like you, and you are doing an amazing work because you are really open to any kind of talent in a way. It's not like you are interested by one particular corner of the industry. You look at it as with a wider lens, and that's, I think, is fantastic.
Yes, thank you. I like covering all of the industry, all mm-hmm. in the industry. Mm-hmm. And actually this last year with the pandemic, it felt... It brought a different importance to me, I felt, of doing my show, being able to get stories out there and try to help. You kind of feel like, what can I do to help?
Very much. And I think it has been admirable from so many chefs, the work has been done to help the community, to help, each one of us have worked in our own city and done a lot of work during this difficult time, either to help the family of our staff or the community of our city. And you have helped us, support that. So.
Well, thank you. We'll see. I'm keeping going. I don't know how many shows I'm going to, if there's going to be an end, but I don't know how many restaurants for you will be an end.
I am looking forward to be in many more.
Awesome. We'll see. We'll have to plan that.
Right, so, absolutely.
Thank you so much. Congratulations on everything, and I will see you at Danielle and your other places. My guest today has been Danielle Ballou, legendary chef and restaurateur. To learn more about him and all of his restaurants and projects, go to danielleballou.com and follow him on Instagram at Danielle Ballou. And also go back and check out our episode 210 on Heritage Radio Network. It's in the archives, and I just listened back, and it was like, it's a good show. So check that out. Follow me on Instagram at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry, and my websites are BayerPublicRelations.com, SherryBayer.com, and AllInTheIndustry.com. And as I said, and all of my listeners know, all of our shows are archived at heritageradionetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks to my engineer today, Kevin, and thanks again to Danielle, and thanks to Claudia and Jessica. I'm Sherry Bayer. That's a wrap for 300 shows. Crazy. What a milestone. I'm going to be back next week with 301 with Omar and Sibyl, so I hope you tune in then. And thanks, as always, for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
Bye. Congratulations, Cherry.
Thank you, Danielle. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.